Blog Talk Radio.
We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager. It's January 9th. It's our first live show after the holiday. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening. We have a great lineup of guests for you tonight. Just a multitude of things going on in the culture here in Missouri and across the country as the new year begins, as the new legislative sessions begin, as all of our legislators in Missouri and in Washington, D.C. are sworn in, things are just on fire. And the grassroots movement needs to be on fire to keep up with all of it. Folks, we are in a world of hurt. Things are going on all around us that need our attention. And we're here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition to help you keep informed about what's going on here in the state of Missouri and across the country. A couple of little things that we'll talk about. We've got a full lineup for you tonight. We've got some great, interesting people lined up to talk to you about various issues here in the state. But I kind of want to touch on a few things. It's not all of the important things that are going on in the world today, because we just don't have time for all of that, but we're just jumping on a couple of light items today. Today, I posted on my Facebook page, Lisa Payne Nager. You can go there and friend me, and you can see that information, or you can go to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page and see that I received a notice in the mail today, or email. I have an app on my iPhone called Gas Buddy. And gas prices are going to jump within the next 36 hours. So if you haven't filled up your tank, go out and wait till after the show is over. Go out and fill up your tank, because gas prices are going to skyrocket within the next 24 to 36 hours, from what I understand. And if you don't have a Gas Buddy app on your iPhone or your smartphone, or I think even on your computer, get it, because it's alerted me more than once to gas hikes and saved me a couple of pennies here and there, because gas prices, within hours, I can go out on a Friday morning and come back on Friday afternoon and gas prices will have risen at least 20 cents a gallon. So, you got to say, with the economy being the way it is, you got to save pennies everywhere you can. So go out and fill up your tank. I got another interesting email from someone today about a tweet that's floating around out there in the inner spaces. Representative Kurt Barr, as everybody knows, the new legislative session has started today. Actually, there was a big rally at the Capitol today. All of the representatives and senators have been sworn in. And Representative Kurt Barr sent out a very interesting tweet on his Twitter account earlier, right after he was sworn in. During the oath of office for the Missouri House, the Missouri Chief Justice substituted Constitution with government. And I called Kurt Barr today and I discussed it with him a little bit, and most of the representatives there are kind of just blowing it off as a misstatement or a misquote, but it is a very interesting peek into the mind of your government officials. And we are very focused, folks, on watching the legislative and executive branches. And I have said for a very long time here, I know you've heard me rant about it before here on the Culture Vigilante Hour, that while we're so busy watching those other two branches of government, the judiciary is the branch of government that is killing the culture, and they are doing it under a cloak of darkness. Nobody's watching them. Nobody's monitoring them. Nobody's holding them to account. And they I think it was a Freudian slip. You know, they, like no other, are running the show from behind the scenes, and nobody is holding them accountable. And it's just so interesting that a Chief Justice of Missouri would perform, you know, administer oath of office to legislative officials who've been elected, and the individuals who are supposed to know the Constitution better than anybody, inside and out, upside down, three ways from Sunday, would substitute the word constitution, government for constitution. You know, while you're administering the oath of office to your elected officials, it's just, you know, I don't know. Some people believe in coincidence. I'm not so sure I do. So, you know, it's just an interesting tidbit out there. While those Kurt Barr assured me that while those representatives took that oath of office, they also get a signed copy of their oath when they're sworn in, that they have to sign, and it was written correctly with the proper words in place. But, you know, it just amazes me that kind of faux pas can take place. And I guess accidents can happen, but it's a little bit scary to think about those kinds of things when, you know, these are the people who are leading us and who are in charge of our government. Another thing I found interesting, and this is kind of left over from last week, and while, you know, we all have just come off of the great fiscal cliff debate, and we kind of got through it with, well, you know, some of us got through it better than others, I guess. None of us really got through it very well. There was a CBS article entitled "Cruz Shutdown May Be Necessary." So the elected in Texas are ready to shut down the government. Senator Ted Cruz, along with Senator John Cornyn, agree that, I mean, there's evidently talk in Washington that they are willing to shut down the government to make a point to stop all of the crazy spending that's going on, to address Medicare, Medicaid, all of the entitlement programs that have just gotten out of control. You know, I don't know if they felt like they took a beating after the fiscal cliff debacle last week or a couple of weeks ago, but let's see. In this article, Cruz states that I think we have to be prepared to go as far as to shut down the government if we don't get some serious policies to stop the out of control spending to tackle the debt. And Cornyn agreed. Mr. Cornyn wrote, "It may be necessary to partially shut down the government in order to secure the long-term fiscal well-being of our country." Well, duh, yeah. Thanks for, you know, we needed that a few years ago. But, you know, it is finally nice to see that there are some elected officials who are finally talking about doing something about the out of control spending. And today, the Beacon reported that Representative Blaine Lukemeyer is one of the few in Missouri who seem to be following suit with that sentiment. And maybe the sentiment is growing across the country, because he states the debt limit fight is going to be about reforming Medicare, as he addressed members of the Greater St. Charles Chamber of Commerce. The debt limit and the coming budget negotiations in March are where we have to make our stand, says Lukemeyer. And he claims more public support for entitlement cuts. Lukemeyer's appearance in St. Charles was his first official stop since he was sworn in a week ago to represent Missouri's redrawn 3rd District, which now spans from St. Charles County to west of Jefferson City. And I think what the gist of the whole situation is, and they go on further in this Beacon article today to kind of outline what would be included in these government shutdowns. And let's see if I can find that for you here. Let's see. That's government shutdowns. We have to pay for the interest in our debt. Social Security checks may get cut back. Medicare checks may get cut back. Unemployment benefits may be cut back or terminated, he said. Veterans benefits may be cut back. Medicaid, the states, may not get their Medicaid money, or it's cut back so we can pay the troops. Other federal functions, departments, and buildings would be shut down, the congressman said, except for those needed to protect national security. If you're a contractor doing business with the federal government, you may not need your check for a month, Lukemeyer said, until a deal is struck between Congress and the White House. So, you know, they've done it before. They've shut the government down before when in the 90s. I think they've done it three times in the 90s when they had to make, you know, when they come to the when they came to the edge of the money running out. There's a lot of us out there who think that it might not be such a bad idea for them to shut the government down. I don't think it would be such a bad idea for them to shut the government down for a little while if they can find a way to harness all this wild and crazy spending. You know, I'd be with it. So, as I said, we have just an incredible lineup of folks for you tonight. We've got a full show for our first show back from the vacation of the holidays. We have Grandmaster Michael Rhodes of Hapkido USA, and I met Grandmaster Rhodes just a little more than a week ago. I went in and talked to him at his facility in Wentzville here, very close to where I live in Lake St. Louis. He's got a fabulous facility, and this is a very dynamic, conservative individual, and he's just got a perspective on all kinds of issues, and we'll get into a depth with him in just a few minutes. The great thing about him is, and you know what an education wonk I am, this man is devoted to instilling a mindset and an ethic in children that is just unprecedented, and we just don't have enough of that kind of thing here in this country. Part of the reason that we're in the state that we're in is because we have our youth has been co-opted by socialists in our education system, and the kind of conservative mindset that our parents grew up with and that we grew up with has just kind of left the culture. And Grandmaster Michael Rhodes is doing his part to kind of reinstate that kind of mindset in today's youth. So we're going to be thrilled to death to talk to him. We also have with us Tom Martz of the Lock and Smith Foundation. We're going to do some Yankee Doodle legislation alerts. It's a little bit early in the session to get into depth about where some of these things are going, but we've got some good information on just a few bills that we're going to alert you to. We're also going to talk a little bit more. We've talked about it before on Culture Vigilante about the Agenda 21 legislation that was proposed by Lyle Rowland. And we'll get into some into depth on some other legislation as well. Next Wednesday, there's another rally at the Capitol, and this is an important rally for everybody to get involved in because now more than ever, folks, it's incredibly, incredibly important that you make your voices heard and that these legislators and these elected officials in Jefferson City know that you're not sitting on your haunches letting them do whatever they want to do, that they're being guided by your voice and your wishes. So next Wednesday, I expect to see everybody down at the Capitol in the Rotunda at 10:30. The Consent of the Governed rally takes place. They've been doing this for a few years now. Many, including yours truly, grassroots organizers and grassroots folks will be down there speaking to the legislators down there, giving them a little bit of peace of our mind, let them know what we expect from them in the coming legislative session. And it's also a great opportunity for you to go down and network with your legislators. Go down there and meet them in person, meet with them in their offices after the rally is over, and introduce yourself to them and get to know how things work down there in Jefferson City. And we'll hear from Ron Calzone from Missouri First about that a little bit later. Ed Martin checked in with me today. Ed was just the newly elected state of Missouri Republican chairman for the Republican Party, and he checked in with us today, and we're going to hear from him about what his vision is for reorganizing the Republican Party. We have Randy Noble. Randy Noble is a wonderful author. He's been on the program before. He's got a new book out. We're going to talk to him about that as well. So we're going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk to Grandmaster Michael Rhodes.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
I've got a feeling that the night is turning.
It's license
and to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We are here every Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock, and we are blessed and very privileged to be with a very interesting individual. I had the pleasure of meeting Grandmaster Michael Rhodes last week. I think I actually got to meet him through his fiance, who I ran into at the in the fairgrounds here in Lake St. Louis last fall. Michael Rhodes is just an amazing individual. He has got a long history of working with youth. He's running a business here in Wentzville called Hapkido USA. And I'm not going to go into details. I'm going to let him tell us all about his business and what that is and where it comes from. But he's doing a fabulous job of reaching out to the youth in our community, and he's a fabulous conservative. He's doing a great job of just spreading conservative values in the Wentzville area. Welcome. Thank you for being with us today, Michael.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
So my first question is since we've been having this big debate on the gun issue, and there've been, you know, it's been the hottest topic in the news the past several months. You know, people are looking to guns for protection. This is an alternative form of protection. You're teaching, not that you are not against guns. You are a pro-gun person, but this is just an interesting form, an alternative form of protection or self-defense. That I'm not really aware of. A lot of people are aware of other forms of martial arts. Can you tell us a little bit about what Hapkido is?
Absolutely, ma'am. First of all, to agree with you. Absolutely. Self-defense programs are a wonderful way to start the self-defense awareness within the household, from children to adults, hopefully with the idea to affect the local community and the awareness. Hapkido, specifically Jinjinguan Hapkido, was established in 1967 by my instructor. His name is Kim Young-Young. He's a grandmaster, ninth degree black belt, world renowned. What makes us different is that we do not teach memorized forms, we don't participate in tournaments, and truthfully, we don't hand out black belts to very young children. This is a program that is based on natural progression, where the system of rank is earned and learned. The beautiful thing about it is the idea that we can incorporate boxing and kickboxing, ground defense, and yes, to agree with you, I am absolutely pro-firearm. I'm a firearm dealer. I'm a firearm instructor. I'm an NRA training counselor. And truthfully, it's all about education and awareness. And we're just really privileged and honored to be able to do that for our community.
Okay. So, Michael, your program, basically, when I was at your facility last week, you basically teach kids, but you have programs for everybody. I mean, you do women's self-defense, and you do self-defense for law enforcement as well.
Yes, ma'am. We've been teaching law enforcement. We've trained military units. I'm paramilitary myself. We have a combatives program. Ms. Tracy, my fiance, that you had the opportunity to meet, she has just an incredible program specifically designed for women. It's referred to as the Empower program. And this is truthfully just a great opportunity for mind-spirit balance. And we have wonderful families. We really do try to encourage the conservative values. Everything is very much respect, the yes or no, sir. We monitor school grades. It's a great stress relief for adults. And it's just a wonderful place for people to be able to come that doesn't have, you know, the attitudes or the intimidation factor that sometimes goes with it. So we're just truly blessed, and anybody has an opportunity to visit us, especially at our new location. We're actually the world headquarters now. We're in 600 West Pierce in Wentzville, and we'd love an opportunity for people to just come and see for themselves.
And I can attest to the fact, I mean, you run a real tight ship over there. The kids are right in line. They know what the structure is all about, and basically it's all about structure. I don't know very much about the martial arts, but, you know, the discipline and the structure and the discipline of the kids there is just, it's wonderful, you know, to be around all of those young people who've got a clear vision of what their behavior is and their expectations are, it's just fabulous. And it's all about personal responsibility.
Well, absolutely. And truthfully, the kids that just truly excel is because the parents are behind them. They have an opportunity to be surrounded by people who love them. And, you know, our school and our organization, we have schools in 7 states right now. We just, as of this month, going to become a franchise to regulate and to be able to maintain the standards all across the United States. We have 4 countries in South America now that has joined us. We're in Calgary, Canada. So, I mean, we're really reaching out and trying to spread the word the best we can. And this is just a wonderful opportunity for me because, I tell you, there's not a day of work that goes by when you love what you do. So,
okay, so let's talk about your firearms dealing a little bit. So it's kind of an interesting combination. You've got an intensive, very well-structured, very well-rounded self-defense business run. So, and you yourself are former military. Tell me a little bit about that first.
Well, it was a long time ago, for one. I had opportunity to serve my country, and, you know, when I took an oath and said that I would swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, so help me God, when I ETS'd, I didn't stop with that belief and with that promise. And every day since then, we've tried to do that in other areas. I am a federal firearms license holder, and we do sell firearms. I am 100% supporting of firearms. I am 200% towards education, awareness, and safety of firearms. So I just think, you know, with what we do with the, you know, close quarter combat and self-defense, the opportunity to be able to raise leaders and life champions, that the firearms is kind of on the wild side. So we tell people we go from mild to wild, and just we want to train people to be able to defend themselves in a realistic situation.
Well, what motivated you to get into this kind of business, Michael? I mean, like no other career that I can think of, the dedication and the specialty that you know, to jump off into this area. What motivated you to go there?
Well, truthfully, I had several factors. One, I've been doing it all my life as a child all the way through. I'll be turning 43 in February. And to be perfectly honest, I feel like this is something that God has said I'm supposed to do. And a couple times between my military and training for the Olympics and even working towards becoming a federal agent a couple different times, it seemed that this is what I was supposed to do. And at the end of the day, I just accepted it as God's plan, not mine. And I truly enjoy it. There's not a day that goes by that I don't see a student that has made just extreme progress and watch them develop their character and their confidence and improving in school. You know, what other business out there can say that they have a roughly an 80% success rate of getting children off of medications and so forth for ADHD and all the other labels that people want to give them? So it is a blessing.
You have to talk about that a little bit. So how do you do that? What kind of approach do you take to getting kids off of that? You know, I had that experience myself when my kids were in public school. You know, there are a lot that mindset in the culture is, you know, if your little boy can't sit down for 15 minutes without squirming, you need to put him on medicine. So tell me about how you approach that issue.
Well, the first thing that I don't believe in is neutering via nurturing. So I know it's a little brisk, but it is what it is. We very much implement discipline, diet, exercise, and collectively, when you have an entire family, you have a group of instructors, you have a group of adults that believe in these children, and you surround them with love and guidance and direction, and you support that with faith, then you set them up for success and not failure. And I truly believe that's what it's about. You know, the quality of our future is in our children, and it starts at home. So.
Yep.
We try to reinforce the life skill lessons. This is not about kicking and punching. Our program is not an after-school activity or a daycare. This is about trying to improve the quality of life for our family members.
And did you say you trained for the Olympics?
Yes, ma'am. At one point, I was training towards the Olympics in a sport. It's not self-defense, but in a sport of taekwondo. And my goal was to be in the 96. But like I said, God had other plans for me, so... Here I am.
Well, I mean, you've done a lot with your life and done a lot of good service, which is part of the vernacular anymore in this culture. And you've spent a lot of your time in service in the military, and this is fabulous. We have a caller on the line. Would you like to take a call?
Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure.
Okay. Our caller is Kyle, and he says that he has a question for you. Go ahead, Kyle.
Oh, yes, sir. Hey, I love your way of thinking. It's just absolutely wonderful to hear somebody saying these things on the radio. I wanted to ask a question to you. What's the sure. The advantage, like, of hot keto over, you know, like, if baseball or soccer or whatever? What's the biggest advantage of? I mean, why would someone choose hot keto instead of soccer?
Sure. First of all, very nice to meet you, and thank you very much for the compliment. Well, truthfully, to address your question, intramural sports are wonderful. They're very great at team activities, and they truly do boost confidence and so forth. Hot keto specifically, there's a lot of different martial arts programs out there. This program specifically is individual-based. It's based on natural progression. People earn as they learn and learn as they earn, so to speak, but it really is dialed in on an individual basis. The things from intramural sports, a lot of times they just do not get the one-on-one instruction. Our student-to-instructor ratio is just fantastic. We really take the time to be able to just work with our children, work with our family members. We're there when the kids walk in the door to greet them and say hello to them and say, "What, you know, if you had a great day today, it's great to see you." We just want to consume them with positive energy, and, you know, this isn't a win or lose situation for them. There's no option of losing. We set people up for success. Like I said, we raise people and train people to become leaders. We have wonderful people coming in. We have a gentleman, Mr. Robinson, comes in. He's a coach from R3 Coaching. He teaches our instructors from all over the United States in 21 Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell. So, I mean, we really try to present ourselves as professionals and try to provide a curriculum that is just incomparable. So where are you calling from, by chance?
Actually, I'm from Lake St. Louis.
Lake St. Louis, yeah. Well, you're actually really close to us. If you get an opportunity, you should definitely come by and see our facility and maybe see one of our classes, adults or children, either way.
Yeah, actually, I would love to. But thank you, sir. I truly do appreciate it.
Thank you for calling.
Bless me.
You know, Michael, one of the things that just, I mean, I said this a few minutes ago, but one of the things that really struck me about you was the way, I mean, your whole attitude and your whole approach to life is, I mean, you've got that old school conservative structure to the core, you know, we just don't have that. And that just, you just exude that when you talk to people. And, you know, I've met you once. And I mean, that's the thing that just really struck me about you, and the way that you carry that through your business and the way you approach your students. And I think I even asked you when we were together last week, you're not necessarily getting a lot of pushback when you bring forth these very conservative values. Your facility was full the other night when I was there. You were packed to the rims. Your class was full. You had parents there. Everybody is. It seems to be very enthusiastic about the program you're offering there. You had Fox News on the television in the lobby. Hopefully, you are really meeting a conservative need out there. You strike an accord with some conservatives in the area.
You know, truthfully, man, I think a lot of times people are just so caught up in life and they really don't take time to stop and see what the important things are. And nowadays most parents are working 2-3 jobs, and they trust, I should say they, we, I have a son who's 15 and a half, that's important, the half that is, that they attend school and parents are working, and when they send their kids to school, they just trust that their kids are being taught correctly. In my opinion, is the school systems have been so handicapped in the way that the school teachers just do not have the authority to do what they want to do, to be able to have discipline in the classroom. We've removed them from being able to do their jobs, in my opinion. So I'm all about discipline, but it's all about positive reinforcement, you know. And for us here personally, I mean, one of my personal goals is not, I'm not just teaching people how to fight, but I'm trying to teach them what to fight for. And if I do my job correctly, they'll never have to use their hands and feet. They'll make good choices. They'll surround themselves and make great choices, and they make great friends. We teach our students that you are the four people you hang around with the most. So be very careful in selecting those four people. And as they go through life, they're making good choices, and we try to – our belt structure isn't set up as a positive reinforcement or a politically correct placement as a patch or sticker, as a lot of martial arts schools. They hand them out whether they're ready or not. Our students are, are very, very much taken through a strict regimen of curriculum, and when they earn it, it means something to them. So we're establishing short-term goals with a long-term goal in mind, and I just think that's our responsibility as adults and as a martial arts instructor. If you're not going to do the job right, then don't do it at all.
It's wonderful. So tell me a little about your class structure there. You're open 5 nights a week.
Yes, actually six days total. We have currently, as we kind of get used to our new facility here, we open up at 5 o'clock. We typically have children's class first, sometimes in the form of beginners, then intermediates and advanced. We have adults classes. Both of those children and adults are 5 nights a week. Our women's class for Empower is women only, taught by our instructor, Ms. Tracy Green. She's a phenomenal instructor, truly a person who leads from the front. And the term Empower is really truly what it's about. We just have a wonderful group of women, a lot of them which are mothers of our children. They understand the values and they agree with the ideals and the systems that we teach. They meet 3 days a week, Monday night, Thursday night, and Saturday morning from 10 to 11:30. And I would just encourage anybody, if this is something that you're interested in for yourself or for your children, then we would love to have you in as a guest. Just sign a release form and come and try class and make friends and have a great time. It's a wonderful opportunity to get in shape without, you know, some of the gym regimen stuff and all the cardio. You know, if you're going to get in shape, you might as well learn something. So,
yeah, all that started too. It's a great way to make New Year's resolutions. Okay, so tell us, how can we get in touch with you? How can we find out about where you are and the classes?
Well, first, I would like to encourage everyone to look at our website. It's hapkido-usa.com. That's spelled hapkido-usa.com. And when you look at the website, there's a lot of contact information. But if you look at our locations page, you'll see that we're in multiple states and growing. The services to the right is the various different programs and whatnot that we have. There's some pictures and some short video and stuff that's there. We are currently now the world headquarters, like I said. So as it was told to me, one of my aldermen from last month, we did a ribbon cutting, is that we were the Winsfield's best kept secret. So we're just really privileged and honored to be able to serve our community. Been here since 1994, hopefully we have many, many years in front of us here locally and abroad.
That sounds wonderful. And like I said, folks, if you are serious about wanting to retake the culture, you need to find activities for your kids, because it's all about the kids. The left has been conditioning our kids through the public education system for generations now. And you can see where it's gotten us. They've been patient. They've been methodically chipping away at the culture by the way we raise our families. We need to find activities that reinstill the values, that promote conservative values, that promote self-discipline, that promote personal responsibility. This is a fabulous way to do that, and I can tell you from what I've observed, the Grandmaster Michael Rhodes has got that program all lined out at Hapkido USA. So go to the website, take a look and see what they offer there. Drop in on them for a visit. Tell them Lisa Payne Nager sent you. Tell them you want the Culture Vigilante tour there. And Michael Rhodes will certainly do his very best to see what kind of services that they can provide for you. Thank you, Michael. We really appreciate you being with us, and we hope you'll check back in with us often.
Yes, ma'am. I truly appreciate the offer, and it's been my pleasure here. I appreciate the people calling in. And what I would like to do is extend a special offer to your listeners that if they come in and mention your program, that we'd be glad to give them a 10% discount off of our total enrollment package. So,
well, that's wonderful. Let us know how that goes. We really appreciate it.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, and you have a very blessed night.
You too.
Thank
okay.
You.
We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible, because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
This is the Grassroots Minute. Let's get this straight. First of all, the rich are taxed. The wealthiest 10% of Americans making $250,000 or more a year pay 71% of all federal income taxes. Be that it may be, I've got a question about this never-ending drumbeat from the left about our need to tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. Let's see, a family of four or five, a mom and a dad, and two or three kids, you know, a family like yours, they own a small business with one employee, are making around $250,000 a year, living in suburban Springfield, Missouri. Are they filthy rich? Are they flying around the globe in private jets, buying a new Mercedes-Benz every year, golfing in Hawaii every Christmas like Obama? Are they doing well? No. They shop for bargains. They're planning and thinking about the expenses of their children and planning for their college education. Just being responsible parents and consumers like the rest of us. How does the left figure these people are rich? Someone on the left, please explain that to me. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
That's right, Lisa is back. This is Wednesday night, and you're listening to the Culture Vigilante Hour on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We are so happy to be back from the holiday vacation. There's so much going on, and next week on Wednesday, there's another rally at the Capitol that all of the patriots need to be there. All of the folks of Missouri need to be there because this rally is all about letting the legislators know what you expect of them. And earlier this week, I spoke to Ron Calzone. He's one of the organizers of the rally. Missouri Grassroots Coalition is very proud to be one of the sponsors of the Concerned of the Governed rally, and I will be speaking at the rally next week on education, as, along with many other patriots on many other issues. So let's take a minute and listen to this interview with Ron Calzone. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to the Culture Vigilante Hour on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And tonight we have a guest with us who kind of epitomizes what the Culture Vigilante in all of us in the Missouri Grassroots Movement do, is we kind of take matters into our own hands so that we can be a more effective influence on our government. And tonight we have Ron Calzone with us of Missouri First, and he is one of the organizers for the rally that's going to be next week in the Capitol, the Consent of the Governed rally. And we have Ron here to tell us a little bit about what that's all about. Thanks for being with us tonight, Ron.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
So next Wednesday, early in the morning, 10:30, in the rotunda, we all need to be there. Why?
Well, you know, I think it might have been Ronald Reagan that said the 10 most feared words are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Is that 10 words? I forgot how many it is. Well, the whole idea behind this rally is to tell our legislators that we're the people and we're here to help. And we're here to help them be faithful to their oath of office to support and defend the Constitution. So more than anything, this rally that we do each year, usually on or about the opening day of session, is to remind them that we're watching. The people in whom all political power is vested, as it says in Article 1, Section 1 of the Missouri Constitution, we're there to keep an eye on them.
And sometimes you kind of get the feeling, and you know, within the past couple of sessions, you get the feeling, and especially on a federal level and a lot of times on a state level, they've kind of forgotten who's really in charge of the government. And the purpose of this rally is to kind of set that record straight.
That's exactly right. In fact, one of the rules that we made early on with this project is that we don't allow any elected officials to speak. So only citizens get to speak at this rally. It's a time for the elected officials to listen to us.
And I think that's a great policy. Actually, I wish all the Tea Party groups would kind of go back to that policy, because when the elected officials started infiltrating the ranks of the Tea Party groups, they kind of lost their focus a little bit and made them a little bit less likely to listen and a little bit more likely to want to campaign every time they get in front of a group. So I think that's a great policy to have, especially at the Capitol. So, Ron, tell me how long have we been doing these Consent of the Governed rallies?
Well, this is the third annual, so we've only done it twice before. And this is the first time that we've had a Consent of the Governed rally when the governor was being inaugurated. And so we kind of ran into a little bit of a glitch. You know, normally, we like to do it on the opening day of session. We want the very first thing, especially new legislators are met with, to be this mass of citizens that are there saying, we're going to keep an eye on you. But we couldn't get the rotunda on opening day, which is tomorrow, by the way, Friday. Well, you can tell how busy I've been. Wednesday is the 9th is the opening day. The rally is going to be Wednesday the 16th, because they've got to get prepared for the governor's ball and all the inaugural festivities. We couldn't reserve the rotunda. So this is the third year. And it's going to be a week after the start of session because of the inauguration.
Okay, and we have a very good lineup of speakers. You want to talk about that a little?
Well, actually, our featured speaker is Professor Thomas Woods. And Tom Woods is a senior fellow at the Ludwig von Mises Institute. And you know, if you're not familiar with them, they're the Austrian economists. They're the people that have been telling us for years that we were going to have a housing bubble. For years, they've been telling us that we've got to watch who controls the money supply, because those who control the money supply control your life and liberty. And, of course, in recent years, they've been proven to be right. Tom Woods has written a number of books. One of my favorites is called Meltdown. And Meltdown explains what happened in this current financial crisis. And Meltdown helps you understand just how dangerous the Federal Reserve is and what they're doing to our country, and it'll give you a great lesson in macroeconomics. But Tom Woods also wrote a book more recently called Nullification, How to Resist Federal Tyranny in the 21st Century. And in it, he makes a case for the old Jeffersonian principles and method for resisting unconstitutional federal edicts, like, say, for instance, Obamacare. You know, like maybe, for instance, Race to the Top, things like that. So we are pleased to have him as our keynote speaker. And then we're going to have some little three-minute blurbs from various activists and leaders of organizations representing different issues. And so they'll be short and they'll be sweet, and there'll be maybe 10 or 12 of those three-minute blurbs to complement what Dr. Woods has to say.
Excellent. So we want to make sure that we have a very good crowd in the rotunda next Wednesday on the 16th at 10:30 to let the legislators know that we have an active and engaged citizenry and that we are watching them and that we expect them to follow our direction in leading us in the state government.
That's exactly right. And one of the things we're going to do Wednesday is we are going to take a formal request to both the Speaker of the House and the President pro tem of the Senate. We're going to ask them to instruct the chairman of their committees, because, you know, the committees kind of belong to the pro tem and to the speaker. They get to appoint them, and they report to the pro tem and the speaker. Anyway, we're going to ask them to instruct the chairman of the committees to consider the constitutionality of each bill that goes before their committees. And that need for that was born of something that happened last session. The chair of one of the committees in the House told a witness who was trying to make a constitutional argument against a particular bill that it wasn't her committee's job to consider the constitutionality of legislation. That was the court's job. And so they didn't want to hear any discussion about whether or not the bill before them was constitutional. Obviously, that's wrong. They take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And obviously, that needs to be rectified. So we're going to take an entourage to both the Speaker and the Pro Tem's office, and we're going to make that request. We want them to truly support and defend the Constitution that is designed like to protect our rights and our interests.
Yeah, I actually remember that situation very well, and it just boggles the mind how distorted the view of their duties and their perspective of what their job is in the Capitol can just be so completely changed from what the reality is for them to be there. So it's a great opportunity to set them all back on track. I think that's a great idea. So
We will have fun.
Okay. So we've got a great lineup of speakers. We know that we'll have the ear of the legislature because they'll all be there having been sworn in, and the session will be underway by week. So next Wednesday, the 16th, at 10:30 in the Capitol Rotunda, bring a friend. Anything else we need to know, Ron?
No, but plan on staying. You know, the rally will last maybe an hour, maybe a little longer. But please plan on staying and help us visit the speaker in the pro tem. And then go see your own legislator and tell them that we know that they spend all week long up there with the other politicians and the other legislators. But we don't want them to think of those guys as their peers. They need to be thinking about the folks back home. The folks back home are their true peers. And, in fact, we want to be there not just during rally days, but we need to encourage people to go and keep an eye on their legislators on a regular basis.
Yeah, ongoing. Great. So, Ron, I'm going to post all of this information on the Missouri Grassroots Coalition webpage and on the calendar, but where else can people go to find out information?
They can go to www.libertytools.org.
Okay, and you'll have all that information on where to go and what time to be there.
We will do that, yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Ron Calzone of Missouri First. We will certainly see you next Wednesday morning at 10:30 in the Rotunda.
I'm looking forward to it.
Great. So, like I said, it's very important for folks to show up and make their presence known at the Capitol. You really do have an influence on your legislators when you show up down there. They really do pay attention. You know, for a long time, I think the legislature kind of operated under the cover of darkness, and then the grassroots movement kind of flourished and blossomed, and things changed. So now we have a veto-proof legislature. There's no excuse, folks, for things not to get done the way the people want them to be done. Their excuses just aren't going to cut it, and they certainly aren't going to cut it if you show up at the Capitol on Wednesday and let them know that you expect them to do their job that you sent them there to do. I want to talk for just a minute about the Secret Santa. We pushed hard and heavy last year our Secret Santa initiative here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and I have to tell you, it was wildly successful. We projected a goal of to raise $500 to help four families in Missouri maintain the magic of Christmas for their kids. We received donations from folks from all over the state this year. What Missouri Grassroots Coalition does every year for the past 2 years is we take contributions from generous patriots across the state, and what we do is we go to a department store on Christmas Eve or thereabouts, and pay off the layaway accounts of folks who have toys in those accounts for children who we think that they may not have the wherewithal or the funds to pay those accounts off before Christmas. Therefore, you know, disappointing a lot of very sad kids across the state. And I have to tell you, we set a goal to raise $500 this year, and we doubled that goal. I mean, it was overwhelming how generous the folks across Missouri can be. And I tell you, we helped 15 families here this year in Missouri. 15 families benefited from your generosity, from the money that you sent us to do this good deed across Missouri at Christmas time. 15 families with children woke up on Christmas morning with toys under their tree, and for one more year, these kids are going to still, you know, believe in the magic of Christmas, and they would have the joy to celebrate that with their families. We are continuing that effort. You know, we're going to start early. We're going to start in January here. You can go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa page and take a look at our tab there, you can donate to us by PayPal, check, or money order. And we would be happy. We said that if we would double whatever goal we reached last time. So we raised $1,000 last year. We're going to try to raise $2,000 in 2013. And Lord knows it's going to be a tough year for folks, you know, with Obamacare and the tax issues that are going on. And I did read something, I think, over the holiday or just not too long ago that charitable giving is going to be penalized under Obamacare. So there's not going to be a lot of tax deductions for those kinds of things, and unfortunately we're not tax deductible here at MGC anyway, but charitable giving is going to be a problem, which in my mind is a real problem for the Republic. You know, charitable giving and the kindness of the hearts of the people in your community supporting what goes on here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition or at any charity is about what makes this country tick. So, you know, please keep that in mind. Charitable giving is really all about maintaining your freedom to do the things that you want to do with your money and to help the initiatives that you want to help with your money. So please feel free to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on that Secret Santa tab and send us a few dollars. We're going to try to raise $2,000 by Christmas time so that we can help even more families this year than we helped last year. Right now, we want to go to another interview that we had Ed Martin. Talked to Ed Martin earlier today. Caught him in between appointments. He's a busy guy these days. And he's our new Missouri Republican chair here for the state. Incredible victory. I consider it to be a victory for the grassroots movement. Ed beat out the establishment, what I consider to be the establishment incumbent. And we spoke to him for just a few minutes today, and let's take a listen to that interview right now. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is your Culture of Jolani Hour. And we have Ed Martin on the line with us. He's checking in after his victory last week as he was elected to the new party chairman status. We're very happy to have him with us. Congratulations, Ed. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, great to be on with you, Lisa. Thanks very much. It was great to be on your show and talk with listeners and get our messages out and talk about how important things are. And it was, I think, exciting. You'd sort of want to be balanced about it. I worked really hard to make the case that as chairman of the Republican Party, I had certain skills and talents I thought I could bring. On the other hand, I think a lot of the reason people voted for me was a sense of what you and your listeners and other you and I have been talking about, which is we want to make Missouri better and better for ourselves and our kids and our neighbors, and that has to do with some conservative policies, that principles really that lead to policies that make things better. So I'm excited to talk to you about this.
Well, great. You know, the grassroots is really considering this a big victory, kind of a pushback against the general establishment rule that's been in place for so long. How do you see it?
You know, I'm a little bit less sort of clear on these splits and these lines. I mean, I've worked with a lot of the Republicans that I think people would identify as establishment folk. I haven't always thought that their policies were the right path, and I think we've all known that, and that's part of the reason why so many of us got motivated by the Tea Party and motivated by really changing things up. But on the other hand, I think that the fact is that we're aware of what we really are worried about is the direction of the country and what's happening to America and Missouri. And that sort of transcends, I think that we grassroots folks sometimes look around and say, you might have been in the establishment a few years ago if it had been kind of a different time. And we're just excited. I don't like to sort of spike the ball and sort of dwell on the fact that I, you know, won a race that might have had those splits. And instead, I'd rather think that when we are at our best, the conservative principles that embody what we believe in, I think they have lifted the Republican Party to a position to make things better for our fellow citizens, and that's what we're about.
Okay, well, let's talk about conservative principles, because
sure.
Coming from the grassroots movement, you know, we kind of think maybe the establishment part of the Republican Party has left those principles. What is your vision for bringing that back into the party?
Well, you know, I've done a lot of thinking about this as a candidate and as somebody like you, you and I stood together at Tea Party events and at grassroots events, and I think that there's a lot of ways to, for people to express it, but it sort of goes back to the basics. I mean, if you think thoughtfully, I believe, about America, you realize that America is a place where opportunity is available for every single person. It shouldn't be based on proximity to power or the government giving you that. It's really, and that's what the Constitution meant. When our founders set up the Constitution, they said, we respect the rule of law, which puts in place some ground rules so everyone can have a chance to succeed or fail and to succeed again. And around the world, they marvel at that, our respect for the rule of law. And I think that the founding, you know, those inalienable rights, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, are the descriptions of what you sort of are, why you want to be in a place where the rule of law and the Constitution abide, because you want to be able to live your life and you want to be able to have your liberty and you want to be able to pursue your happiness in whatever form it takes in terms of business and property rights and all. So those are the basics. And when you realize that, you say the Republican Party at our best has put those into policy, into building a judicial system that should respect the rule of law instead of being activist, that, you know, a government that is limited by the Constitution and our individual rights that are protected under the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, but also because of what they are from God. And what I think we're at right now is Obama has laid bare what the Democrat agenda is. It's government will tell you whether you have meaning and whether you have a chance to succeed. And the world should reject that as not American, not the American vision we want. And here in Missouri, I think the Republican Party is going to, you know, what we're going to do is say, you and I can sometimes disagree on what the application of that principle is. But, for example, there's common ground on things like, why is the federal government dominating our education system in a way that is destructive? Why is the federal government dominating the way we have business in terms of regulation? Why is the federal government believing that more and more spending is appropriate, therefore more and more tax? When we all know that we do better to have control over our own property and our own money. And so I think these are arguments that we can win. And when we disagree on whether the specifics of an issue play out, if we are in agreement on the principles, I think we find that we can make Missouri and America a better place for all of us and for our families and for our futures. And that's what I think is at stake. And I don't have a magic bullet. As a chairman of the party, what I want to do is make sure that we're abiding by and living up to our principles and what we're about and not falling victim to the Obama vision of let's just use power to pick winners and losers and to shape how we live and succeed and fail. And I think that's what's destroying America in many ways.
Well, as the chairman of the party, you're faced now with the task of structuring that party for Missouri. You're about to choose your executive director. You also direct candidates. You kind of set the tone, for bringing that back into conservative values back in.
That's right, although I think, again, as conservatives, what we want to do is empower each other and empower our fellow citizens, especially at the local level, to make the decisions. I don't think it's the party's role to decide who, pick and choose who gets to be the candidates. I think it's the party's role to have a very effective system in place to help, I use the phrase, be accessible to Republicans, meaning that we have databases and training and the ability to educate each other on the principles, and that we then if we do that, we'll have lots of good candidates, and they'll compete and they'll do better, and then we'll set the tone. I want candidates that are abiding by the Constitution and the rule of law and understanding that we don't want to be like Obama. We want to be like the Constitution and conservatism. And so, I think we will have staff that are doing that, but here's the other fact is you make a point. The chairman of the party is a non-paying job. It's not your full-time job. It certainly is a prominent role. Set the vision with the work, with the collaboration of the state committee, but then have staff fulfill the job. And as you point out, we will have some turnover on our staff. And when we do, I hope we'll hire the most qualified professionals to do the job. But the job intent is, and I'm backing up to explain it better, I think, the way I see it, the job is to make the Republican Party accessible to its members, to Republicans of all stripes, of all sizes, wherever they are, make clear why we matter and the principles matter. Then we also have to be a party that's relevant in the public discourse. We need to inform people about why we think what's happening is not good for us coming from Obama, and how our principles and policies are better. And when our principles and policies don't live up to the conservatism and the constitutional rule of law, we have to have a party that's willing to push back on that. And I think that's going to be one of the harder parts of the job. But again, if you're doing this, someone said, well, you know, are you doing this for your next job or whatever? I said, I've never done any of this, my campaigns for office or public involvement, except out of a sense that the direction of our country is going wrong. Government size and scope and power and cost is too much. What can we do to change that? I think from this position, we can all work together and make a difference, and we have to, because Missouri is suffering a really a difficult moment, and America is too. And if we do better, I think we have a great optimism for the future.
Well, that sounds great. So do you have a kind of a plan or a vision to engage the general Republican Party in the process a little bit more?
Yeah, first of all, certainly I think we're going to do a lot more, be more active engaging, in collaborating and trying to find ways to create. You know, one of the great things about the Internet and social media is you have a lot more ability to let people be producers of ideas and sharers of ideas instead of just consumers of your ideas. And so I think we've got to enliven that and really let people, you know, think things through. You know, you and I have talked to some of the great conservative grassroots leaders who have ideas on this or that issue. I happen to be a believer in the fair tax. I know some people that are conservative, they think, well, it's not flat tax is better or this or that. Well, these are all important sort of spirited debates on the policy that we have to let loose our people. And we have to be better at being honest brokers with each other. When we disagree on an issue or how we perceive a policy, we need to be better at respecting and telling each other the truth. It doesn't mean we change. But right now, a lot of times, it seems like the party in America, Republican and Democrat, says, here's the way it's going to be, and then they ignore the grassroots. And I think that's a great peril for building the community and succeeding. So, you know, your listeners that are in the St. Louis, the eastern side of the state, we're having our Lincoln Days at the Renaissance Grand Hotel on February 15th, 16th, and 17th in St. Louis. And that'll be a good opportunity, I think, to show a different, engagement, get people involved. But mostly I hope I'm doing a lot of listening. I'm listening to elected officials, you know, men and women that have gotten in office that are trying to make a difference, Republicans, and listening to what their plans are and trying to understand what their perspective is, trying to push them to maybe understand a little bit more what the grassroots feel, what some conservatives feel. I'm doing a lot of listening to grassroots folks. And so we've got to change as you point out, there'll be some jobs, there'll be some changes in personnel at the party. And I intend to do that with a spirit of more transparency and openness for people to be engaged. And I just think we'll do better again to be very help make the thing work better for everybody. So it's an exciting time. I mean, the one thing about the downside about being at a time where so much is at stake is there's a lot of responsibility. We've got to do better because our country and our state need us. And that's the biggest reason to improve, and we got to get after it.
You certainly got your work cut out for you. Thank you, Ed Martin, for being with us today. Thanks for checking in. We hope you'll come back often and keep us posted on the developments as you work through this process of reorganizing the Republican Party.
Yeah, well, thank you. And Lisa, you know, anytime that you have something, an issue or a comment, I encourage your listeners and yourself to engage us. And, you know, I'm a phone call away and an email away, and we've got to, again, I think people will – we just got to understand that this moment in our history as a state and as a nation requires us to band together and get ourselves back on course. And I think we can do that when we understand those conservative principles and put them in action. And when we don't, when we fall victim to what the media and the left wants us to do, which has become sort of corrupted by the politics of power, it really leads us to places that a lot of folks are left out and hurting, and that's where I think we are. So anything you hear or see, let me know, and I wish you all the best, and thanks again for the time.
Will do. Thank you, Ed. Talk to you soon. Okay, we're back. It's great to have a check-in from Ed Martin. Really excited about his position as the Missouri Republican Party chair. Really hope to see some what he's talking about. I hope to see some transparency within the party. We had some problems, especially in the last year. We had some, you know, with the caucus that happened here in St. Charles County and the way that, they're picking the congressional replacement for Joanne Emerson. We want to make sure that, you know, things get done the way they
need to get done in the Republican Party and that the people are a part of the process. So we wish Ed Martin the best of luck and hope that he checks in with us often. Okay, we're going to move on to, we're going to revive another segment here that we started last session. One of the things that just really burns my britches is when you see legislation going through the legislature that is worthless, and there's a lot of it, folks. They file more than 2,000 pieces of legislation a year, you know, and some of it moves, some of it doesn't, you know, some of it's good, most of it's not. And what I really hate to see is legislation that elected campaigners, whatever you want to call them, legislators, representatives, use to go out and campaign on. And this kind of legislation is really, it's the kind of stuff, because we're all engaged in the process, you know, the kinds of, it talks about the kinds of changes that we want to see in government and in our culture. It really gets us fired up, but it's basically useless legislation. I call it Yankee Doodle legislation, and there's a lot of it that goes on in Jefferson City, and there's a lot of it that goes on in D.C., but we're focused here on Missouri, and there are a lot of legislators that, because they know, you know, they're masters at their craft, they know how to campaign, they know how to manipulate your emotions, and basically what Yankee Doodle legislation is legislation that manipulates your emotions. It gets you fired up, it gets you enthusiastic about the candidate, but it does absolutely nothing to pertain to maintain your autonomy and to protect your rights as a citizen in this state. So we developed a segment last year called Yankee Doodle Legislation Alert, and Tom Martz of the Lock and Smith Foundation, there's no one better to help us ferret out those kinds of pieces of legislation than he is. He's the one of the main guys at Lock and Smith who just sift through all of this legislation every session. They read it. I can't imagine that their eyes aren't bleeding by the end of May with all the work that they do, and they flag this stuff, and every year they appoint or they award the Lock and Smith Award to the legislators of one representative and one senator who are the most constitutionally voting representatives at the Capitol, and we want to welcome him here today. Thank you, Tom, for being with us.
On that introduction, you just realized, you just informed me, I think, of how much of a life that I really don't have.
No, that's pretty true. And we live our lives in the grassroots movement by following this ridiculous stuff so closely and trying to inform the public. I cannot imagine, Tom, how you guys, I don't know how many folks you have now at Lock and Smith who sift through this. I mean, they literally do right in the neighborhood of 2,000 pieces of legislation a year, and you guys read all of it.
Yeah, we start going through the stuff as soon as they start pre-filing, and we pretty much start ferreting through the... You know, it doesn't, once you get used to what it is that you're doing, you can pretty much ferret through it pretty quickly. Now, we won't get to every single bill that has been introduced or pre-filed in the House and the Senate, because eventually they're going to get to a point where bills are going to start to get to the point where the third read and passed. And then that's where we make our determination. We pretty much have a brief overview of whether or not we liked it from the get-go. But once it reaches that third read and pass stage, then we really start delving into them and looking at them very closely, scrutinizing them to either the Constitution or the federal Constitution, whichever one the bill is based on. And then from that analyzation, if you will, we come to a conclusion of whether or not this is something that government should be doing or not. And if it is, and you vote yes, hallelujah. If it's not, and you vote yes, then we have to ding you for it. And like you described earlier, at the end of the year, we add up all the correct votes, and whoever has the most correct votes, a member of the House, a member of the Senate, gets awarded the Lock and Smith Granite Plaque for being the most constitutionally voting member of the legislature.
Right. And you guys have been doing that for how many years now?
This is the start of number 4.
Okay. And you're still at it. Good for you. Oh, my gosh.
Go at it, and I think it's become an educational experience, and we're looking at getting more people involved. We even got some of the legislators now who are giving us more of an ear than what they have before, and that's a sign or a show of a sign that maybe they're willing to do a little bit more listening than talking.
Well, that would be, I mean, if you can accomplish that, you've moved a mountain right there.
I would agree, and I hope that the you know, the line of communication between our group and the legislators, and I include all of them, not just of one political party, but all of them, both political parties, because the faster we get back this state back to the Constitution, the better off we're going to be.
Just out of curiosity, has a Democrat ever made it into the final five?
Oh, absolutely. 2 years ago. This is the one that basically got our organization a black flag with the Republican Party, is because we had four finalists that were Democrats in the House, and we had two finalists in the Senate that were Democrats. And to be honest with you, when we look at legislation, we don't care who introduces it. All we do is we read the legislation. Then we come to a conclusion on whether it is or is not constitutional. Then we look at the votes, and depending on how they voted, we start tabulating a point score. Oftentimes, we don't even know if a representative is a Republican or Democrat, because we're not looking for that. We're just looking at last names. And when we get to the end and we finally get a point score, then I can actually go back and I look at, you know, when we send out a press release. That is the only point in time that any of us are aware of whether that individual is a Republican or Democrat, unless we know them personally.
Well, you know, again, you know, up is down and down is up in Jefferson City. I have seen in the last couple of years Republicans do some incredibly ridiculous things, and then I've seen the Democrats do things that just shock me because they're so conservative. I don't know. You know, but, you know, it's like you said, if we can get everybody back on the constitutional train, that's the goal, you know, and we shouldn't really care, you know.
I don't believe we should.
Right. Absolutely. And that's the goal. So, Tom, you and I spoke last week. You've identified four pieces of legislation that we kind of want to chew on. One of them we've chewed on here on Culture Vigilante already, and it's because we follow closely the issues with Agenda 21. Here we have Ray Cuneo on as our guest as on a regular basis, and Lyle Rowland has introduced House Bill 42. We've talked to him on the program before, and what he's trying to do is to throw a wrench into the works of Agenda 21. What do you think of HB 42?
HB 42, as far as we are concerned, that is a function of government. It protects Missouri state sovereignty, and we were all in favor of it. Now, of course, that is based on the way it is worded now.
Right.
And once it gets to third read and passed, if it gets that far, it could completely change.
Right. It's got a long way to go. People can be throwing
right.
commas and brackets into it and underscores, and it could be a completely different bill by May.
And I think in a manner, when you asked me to send you that list last week, I actually kind of messed up and I sent you the wrong list, because I wasn't thinking about the Yankee Doodle legislation part. So if we can kind of off track and get back onto the Yankee Doodle legislation aspect of it, I do have several of those that they may not go anywhere, but the fact that they have been introduced should have people scratching their head and asking themselves, is that what I sent my legislator up there to do?
Okay, take it away.
The first one I'd like to discuss is House Bill 37. This will be known from here on out as the Thanksgiving Family Protection Act. This bill will force retailers in the state of Missouri to be closed during the hours of 12 a.m. and 11:59 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day, unless, of course, you are a restaurant or a retailer whose primary business is motor fuel sales or pharmaceutical sales.
Okay. And this doesn't even come close to being a function of government, but it's probably making some retail store sales associates really happy.
It probably is based on that aspect, but, you know, there's a lot of us who are of the mindset that, you know, if you didn't want to work those hours, you should have never went into the line of work and be in retail sales.
There you go. Yep. We all have applying for whatever job you want to work at and ask, you know, it's just a disaster asking government to enter into private business. It's just the wrong thing to do. You know, I mean, I'm dumbfounded. Keep going.
But this is the kind of thought process that many moons ago gave us blue laws.
Right.
Where businesses were forced to be closed on Sundays because of it being a day of worship. Now we've got a legislator who's introducing a bill because some people don't like to work on that day. And basically telling them that, well, we'll make sure that you don't have to work. We'll take care of it for you.
Right. You know, we have a lot of businesses, a lot of retail businesses in our state that mandatorily close down on Sundays.
Correct.
It's their choice to do so. And a lot of consumers appreciate that that aspect in the character of that business, and they patronize that business because they choose to patronize that business and support that character. You know, I mean, if you don't like the fact that Walmart is open at 10 o'clock on Thanksgiving evening, don't shop at Walmart.
Absolutely.
Make the choice yourself. Don't legislate it, you know, and tithe and which would probably cause further ramifications in businesses that, you know, when government gets involved later on.
You bet. I'm in 100% total agreement.
Okay. What's your next one?
The next one will be HB 39. This one gets introduced quite a bit. It gets introduced on both sides of the political aisle from my research. This is the one that a lot of people are not happy with the Electoral College. They would like to ban the Electoral College and vote in our president by national popular vote.
Oh, you know what? And we do see this one very often. And this scares me, because the tactic of the legislature, and people need to understand this, is I mean, it's commonplace. This is how the format works in Jefferson City. You introduce it one year and you don't expect it to go anywhere. And maybe the next year you don't expect it to go anywhere. But maybe two or three years down the line, you know, it's been introduced so many times and it's been modified or changed or whatever. In 3 or 4 or 5 years, it passes.
Well, I like to tell people, even though we have term limits, we don't have term limits on stupid ideology. Once it's introduced there, it stays there.
Right. And, you know, they never, never, never rescind.
No, and I think the individual who could best discuss that was the person that you had on the air Tuesday night with Cynthia Davis. She was there to watch some of these bills that were kind of forced through the process simply because, you know, this person he's term limited or she's term limited at the end of this year, so let's give them a going away present.
Oh, God. Whew, okay. Yeah.
Now, are you sitting down for this next one?
All right, I'm ready. Go ahead. I'm going to have to take blood pressure medicine, I think. Go ahead.
All right. Next one is HB 40. This one is going to require a tax stamp on controlled substances.
Pseudoephedrine?
No, marijuana.
Oh, God, no. Okay, you know, there's a huge debate. I mean, even among conservatives about legalizing marijuana. So this is a legalized marijuana bill?
No, absolutely not. It still makes it illegal. But if you're going to sell it or you're going to keep it in your possession, you have to have a tax stamp for it before they arrest you and throw you in jail for it. Kansas had this bill about maybe 8-9 years ago. And I do believe it passed through the Kansas legislature, made it to the governor's desk, and you did have people who would go to the state capital of Kansas to get a tax stamp for their pot.
Oh, my God. So explain it to me, Ron or Tom. I don't get it. I mean, the idiocy just oozes. Serious. I mean, is it a protest because they're trying to legalize marijuana? What are they doing? And what?
Well, it says any person who actually or constructively possesses more than 35 grams of marijuana, one or more marijuana plants, 7 or more grams of any other unauthorized substance that is sold by weight, or 10 or more dosage units of any other unauthorized substance that is not sold by weight. It also goes down and discusses illicit alcoholic beverages, such as illicit alcoholic beverages include, but they are not limited to, bootleg liquor, moonshine, non-tax-paid liquor, and white liquor.
So if I make wine in my basement, is that bootleg?
It may be.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So and then we're going to all go turn ourselves in because we've got these illicit substances.
Yeah, the excise tax is hereby levied on unauthorized substances possessed either actually or constructively. I don't know how you possess something constructively, but that's neither here nor there. It's 40 cents for each gram or fraction thereof of harvested marijuana stems and stalks that have been separated from and are not mixed with any other parts of the marijuana plant.
Oh, my God. Okay.
$350 per plant, whether you're growing or detached from the soil, on each marijuana plant with foliage.
Oh, my God. Oh,
$50 for each gram or fraction thereof of cocaine. So now we're up to harder drugs. We're into cocaine now.
Oh,
there's all kinds of stuff. And I found it quite funny because there was, $31.70 for each gallon or fraction thereof of an illicit alcoholic beverage sold by the drink. So I guess they're allowing you to sell it, but it has to be taxed before they arrest you.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. So you know, you kind of, I don't know, maybe this is a stupid question. I don't know. But, you know, is bootleg liquor really that much of a problem in Missouri?
Well, according to that television show Moonshiners on, the Discovery Channel, I think, it all occurs in North Carolina and South Carolina.
Oh, my God. This is going to end up on the Leno show. I mean, this is going to be one of those hysterical, crazy, I mean, they're going to be making fun of us forever. Okay.
You know, maybe that's why this individual introduced this.
15 minutes of fame on the Leno show?
Absolutely.
Oh, I've never heard of anything so crazy. Okay, it's going to take the whole legalized marijuana debate to a new level for sure.
Well, I am of the opinion too many people call marijuana a drug. I think we need to get back to defining what it is in reality. What it is in reality is a plant. What people use it for is a drug.
Right.
And I would really like to see our state legislature, and I don't know how you could go about doing this without, you know, basically telling the federal government where they could get off at, but I would really like to see an industrialized hemp bill that allows, and I hate to say it that way, but allows farmers to grow industrial hemp because it can be used for so many things, and it would be a means to get our economy back up and rolling.
Okay, I'm certainly not an expert on this. But industrialized hemp is not the same as marijuana. Is that right?
That is correct, but it always gets lumped into the same thing. You could smoke industrialized hemp, and about the only thing you're going to do is sear your lungs, and your throat's going to be so sore that you can't speak.
Same effects as marijuana.
No, you don't get any effects. It just makes it'll make your throat raw, it'll make your lungs raw. There's nothing to it. There's no high to it. It would almost be like if you went out and ground up bamboo shoots and put them in a cigarette and tried to smoke them.
I don't know what the point of that would be, but okay. So, all right. Oh, my God. It just gets worser and worser every year. Oh, you got any more?
Let's go with this last one.
Okay.
This one is creating a crime.
What's the number?
38.
HB?
Yes. Yeah, I'm sticking with House bills this segment.
Okay. HB 39, creating a crime.
We are creating the crime of altering or falsifying drug or alcohol test results, or selling or transporting a biological sample so you can alter or falsify a test result.
Isn't that a crime already?
I think you would be able to say that would be fraud.
Yeah. So,
but I'm not an attorney, so I can't dice the language up as good as they can.
They went on the radio. Okay, so, yeah, I don't understand that one.
I don't either. And remarkably, all four of these are introduced by the same individual.
Oh, you're kidding me. Are you going to say
no. Every single one I just read has been introduced by the same person.
You're not going to name them on the air?
Rorda? R-O-O-R-D-A?
Jeff Rorda from...
Jeff Rorda, that's him.
Lewis County, yes. Oh, good Lord. Okay, well, that explains...
It's almost as if he didn't have nothing to do that day and said, you know, I'm going to go down and make Jay Leno happy.
I think so. Our friends at St. Louis Tea Party are rolling on the floor right about now. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so we're going to keep an eye on Jeff Rorda. Maybe we need to send him an email. We're going to post the emails of all the legislators and senators up at the representatives and senators up at Missouri Grassroots Coalition anyway, so that you can blast them with emails. We need to absolutely send Jeff Rorda some emails.
Isn't he term limited out after this term?
Don't quote me on it, but I think that he is.
So that might explain the thought process of introducing legislation like this. He's looking for that out bill, the one that's going to make him a legend in his own mind.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just creating a lot of confetti in my mind. My gosh. This is ridiculous. This is absolutely, I don't know which is worse. I don't know which.
And this is what we pay for.
Yeah, and along with the 1,996 other pieces of legislation that will go through the House, this is, you know, some of these are a little scary, especially the Electoral College thing. And you need to probably be on the lookout for that, you know, on the Senate side as well, because most of the time you see some of the time you see these bills duplicated in both houses, right?
Yeah, sometimes you do see them duplicated on both. In the Senate and the House, and then there's often times where somebody else will introduce very like legislation. Like any of these House bills that we just talked about, somebody else can introduce this too, and it might change one or two words.
Right.
So it's not exactly the same bill, but it's the same ideology process that they use to get to this point.
Very, very crafty indeed. Okay, Tom Martz, I think we're going to have our work cut out for us this legislative session. It seems like there's going to be a lot of hanky-panky going on, and the folks out there need to be aware. Yankee Doodle legislation is very serious stuff, actually. I mean, we're making light of it here, but this stuff can really affect you. And every time a bill is passed in the Missouri legislature, a little bit more of your freedom gets taken away, whether it's Yankee Doodle legislation or not, folks. So passing legislation is something that we should not think of lightly. We need to start creating a mindset within the House of Representatives and the Senate and the community at large that the main job to going to Jefferson City is not to pass as many bills as you can. The main job is to stay within the Constitution and reinforce the laws that we already have.
I have actually asked a couple of House members and a couple of senators, I don't know if it's going to get done, but I have actually asked them if they would either write into the rules of their General Assembly or put it forth in legislation a bill that would require, before any vote was taken on any bill, they would have to read the whole complete bill in its entirety. And then after that is finished, they also would require them to read the section of the Missouri Constitution that grants them the authority to infringe upon an individual's rights to even vote on this piece of legislation. We're not going to slow this stuff down unless we can actually slow down the process. And too many times there are numerous votes taken during the day, especially closer to the end of the legislative session, where no one even has time to look at the pieces of legislation they're voting on. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend, if you haven't had time to read it, I don't care what you think or what you believe, vote no.
Vote on it, absolutely. Is there anything in the Missouri Constitution that provides a place for legislators to rescind outdated or redundant or bad legislation? I mean, you know, they all go there because it's their claim to fame, it's their legacy to pass legislation. Is there any way that we can promote the idea or the ability to rescind laws?
There is, and I think the individual who did it the best that I'm familiar with was Representative Cole McNary. Every year, most of the legislation that he would actually introduce was legislation that was repealing legislation that wasn't needed. And we're going to go through a process here within the next few months, especially after we get out of this legislative session, at looking at revised statutes for the state of Missouri. And start going through there and picking out portions that should be eliminated. There's no reason for these things to be on the books. And I would bet we're going to have a very large notebook full of different sections of different revised statutes that literally you could remove them completely off the books and nothing would change.
That's an excellent idea. If we can help you promote that at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, you just let us know.
Absolutely. And for those who are wanting to know the legislative process, you know, throughout the year, they can always go to our website, lockandsmith.com. Lock is spelled with an E, and we will try to keep an updated list of bills that we are tracking, bills that we are watching, and also let people know which bills that we believe that they should be calling their representatives and their senators on, saying, hey, I want this one to pass. And I want it to pass because,
mm-hmm.
whatever that reason is, because there are some very good state sovereignty bills that are up on the this year. There's some very good local control bills. There's a few bills that are actually limiting government, of which HB 34 is one of those. There's some bills that are discussing transparency of government. So there are some people out there that are introducing really good pieces of legislation. It's through the committee and to the floor that normally is where the problem resides.
Right. And really, if they had some pushback and some pressure from the people, there might be a little bit less distortion to those bills as they go through the process, yes?
Correct. It's not what they do. It's you got to look in the mirror and say, what can I do?
Right.
And if I can get on the phone and I can call my representative, I can get on the phone and I can call my senator, you don't need to threaten them. Well, if you don't do this, I'm not going to vote for you. Well, that you just pretty much cut your nose off to spite your face because I'll never listen to you again. But if you can educate them on why it is that something like this should be done, you may find that they're more receptive to you when you come to them again and again and again and again under those same auspices.
No, absolutely. If they continue to disappoint you and you've been in constant communication with them, they know you're not going to vote for them.
Absolutely.
So you don't need to tell them. They know. So that is why it is critical for you to be in contact with your legislators. They sit up and take notice when you show up at the Capitol, when you take time to make a phone call. People that are engaged, it's like shining a flashlight in a room full of cockroaches, man, I tell you. Not that I want to draw that analogy, but, you know, that light makes a huge difference. When you shine that on a legislator and they know that they're operating under light, they pay attention. They sit up and take notes.
Now every year we have what is called the Lockett Smith Award winner review show, where we'll have the previous winner from the, like, last year it was Senator Lemke and Representative Marshall. They actually video conferenced one of our meetings, and I can't remember which one said it, but they said, you know, if we get more than five pieces of information, email or phone call or a letter, on any one piece of legislation, he said, I would be amazed, because generally we do not hear from the people. We hear from lobbyists, but
right.
We don't hear a lot from the people.
And you don't want the lobbyist voice to be louder than the voice of the people. And, I mean, that's really what's wrong with government.
Absolutely. And in all sincerity, grassroots, constitutional, liberty-minded people they are their own lobbying group if they would just band together and do it.
Okay, Tom Martz, you showered us with just invaluable information, and we look forward to you being with us many times during the upcoming session. What you bring to the program is fantastic in helping us with this Yankee Doodle legislation alert to help keep the folks involved and engaged. Thank you for being with us tonight. I appreciate it.
I thank you for the opportunity of having me on.
And let's go to lockandsmith.com and keep abreast of the details that are going on and the legislation that the folks are following there. They also have a Facebook page. Go there, and they post that information with comments, and you can get involved and engaged in the process there. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take another real quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk to Randy Noble.
This is the Grassroots Minute. Everyone knows that the city of Detroit faces a major financial crisis, but one member of the city council thinks President Barack Obama should step in and help. Nearly 75% of Wayne County voters pulled the lever for Obama in November, and according to Detroit Councilwoman Joanne Watson, President Obama owes the city a government bailout for supporting him in the 2012 election. In a recent council meeting, Watson said,
"After the election of Jimmy Carter, the Honorable Coleman Alexander Young, he went to Washington, D.C. He came back home with some bacon.
Right.
That's what you do. That's what you do. This is our people in an overwhelming way supported the re-election of this president. And there ought to be a quid pro quo, and you ought to exercise leadership on that. Of course, not just that, but why not?"
No, Councilwoman Watson, what you do is stop with the handouts or paybacks and work together to lower taxes and bring business back to Detroit and once again make it the great manufacturing mecca it was. And this is why conservative sites are suggesting that Mitt Romney may have been correct in his assessment that Obama won re-election because he gave voters gifts. I'm Terry Barner for the Grassroots Minute.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. And back with us again, we have Randy Noble of The Cross in the Desert. blogspot.com. Randy's been with us before. He's an author. His last book, Beyond the Veil, was a book about women in the Middle East, Muslim women in the Middle East. And Randy's written another book, and he's here with us to discuss it tonight. It's called The Rose of Nowruz. Thanks for coming back and being with us tonight, Randy.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Okay, so you've written a new book, The Rose of Nowruz. It's a fictional book based on true factual information kind of things, based on people that you know in Iran. Is that true?
Yes, it's based on real people that live in Iran. And these are people that have struggles just like you and me. They're living in a very oppressive, fearful situation with a government that rules their lives from the cradle to the grave. And so these are real people with real struggles that are suffering. And I just quote my one friend who is a painter. She paints graphics. She paints the walls of buildings. Her name is Leela Rashid. And she said, "I'm in agony and suffering here. My talents, my abilities are not appreciated." And that's largely because she's a woman.
So, Brent, let's back up a little bit. And why don't you tell me a little bit, Randy, about how you got interested in writing about this subject. How did you get involved in discussing issues of the Muslim lifestyle with people in Iran, and are you kind of a Christian missionary to these people?
I would say more like a Christian pastor, Lisa, because these people have a spiritual thirst and a hunger for the freedom and the lifestyle and the beliefs that we do. It all began with Neda Sultan back in the 2009 election in Iran. She was a woman you saw all over the world on the video, cell phone video. She was shot through the chest by a Basiji militia man standing up on the roof taking pot shots at protesters. someone was hovering over her with a cell phone, and the whole world saw how Iranian government treats their citizens. It began with that. A real love developed from that, and I began to get on Facebook and just really kind of friend request the people from Iran, and it led to a multiple handful to hundreds of people that are friends now that I really am close and dearly involved with. These are people that I talk to on a pretty much of a daily basis. And through this friendship, I've written a book, as you mentioned, The Rose of Nowruz, meaning in Persian, New Day. It's about the new year. And it's about a young concert violinist named Mahera, whose father is a university professor. You said it's fictional. It's true. The story itself is rather fictional in one sense, but it's very true in the other sense, because it's based on the stories my friends have told me that live in Iran.
And the women, and it's mostly centered around the lives of women in these books. Is that right?
True. I guess I've become, I guess I mentioned this before, kind of a woman's rights activist, because the way women are treated in Islam, their testimony is only worth half that of man. The inheritance rights goes largely to the man. They only get half. Women are stoned before men can prove that she committed adultery. A woman is stoned, along with the man that offends as well, but the woman is stoned, buried halfway up to her chest in the mud. And this takes place in Saudi Arabia and, in fact, in Iran. So women are treated cruelly. One of the biggest issues in the book, The Rose of Nowruz, is about the Ghazi Irshad. They enforce the Islamic dress code, and they drive throughout the streets of Iran. If a woman comes out publicly, her hijab is on improperly, she's showing too much skin, or she has on any kind of makeup and polish, it's offensive. And they can be pulled aside in A. They can be arrested, fined, put in prison. Most of them are put in classes that they repent of this and get in line with the government policy of proper Islamic dress code. So I largely take up the case for women simply because they're treated like second-class citizens in Iran.
Is there kind of an underground movement? Are these women, well, first of all, I mean, these women are Muslim women. Do they have a desire to leave the Muslim faith? Is there an underground movement for them to leave the Muslim way of life? Or,
yes, and that gets into a part of the book I talk about, it, the underground church in Iran, which I wrote about in Shining Star. Lots of Muslims in Iran and Morocco, places all over the world, are having visions and dreams of Jesus. These are real documented cases. In most cases, they get online and they find out about Christians. They find out about the freedom and the love that we as Christians share online. And they're drawn to that because they don't have that in Islam. But because of the rules in Islam, especially in Iran, if you convert from Islam to Christianity, you can be put to death. They have to meet secretly. And I've talked to two friends, I can't name names, two friends that have become Christians but cannot meet publicly, of course, because they were once Muslims. It's the sin of apostasy, and they have to meet secretly. So there is a real movement there. God's spirit is working in a tremendous way in Iran.
So when you write about these women, first of all, it's my understanding that most Iranian women are largely uneducated. They cannot read, they cannot write. Is that true?
Oh, no, no, no. The women I talk to, chemical engineers, English supervisors, these women are quite intelligent. They are doing their best to get an education. My friend Atefi wants to come here to the United States. She's taken French class. She's taken classes in English. She wants to be perfected in English. The problem is, because of the strain of the sanctions on Iranians, she doesn't have the money to come here, and it's very difficult, as you know, to migrate. And a lot of them are very educated. The biggest pleasure I get out of my friends is I meet with them online, sometimes in video chat, and I will read my books to them, and they can learn English, perfect it better when they hear the words spoken. And so, yes, many of them are very educated, and they want to leave, yes.
So do they see education as a ticket out of their bondage and their oppression?
Yes, they really do. And, you know, a lot of them, for instance, my friend Naheed is an English supervisor, and she also takes care of the kindergarten class. And she loves her job, but she's had to work extra hours just slaving away because of the sanctions and the economic pressure there, not making enough money. And I just talked to her today. And she just came out and said to me, where is God in all of this? A lot of them, their faith is shaken by what the government requires of them and the pressures they put on them. They're looking for ways to get educated and to leave there. They really want to leave.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about your book, The Rose of Nauru. Give me first of all, how did you come up with the title, and give me a little bit of an overview of the book.
Well, The Rose is about, of course, the flower rose. And for Iranians, on their New Year, Persian New Year, every March 21st, every springtime, they have a certain setting, a table with lots of fruit and vegetables and foods. And one of the symbols of Nauruz is a rose. And in the book, The Rose of Nauruz, the Hera looks at the rose as a symbol of hope, a symbol of freedom for the new year. And so she looks at that rose in that mystical way. When she was a child, she was in the field, surrounded by the beautiful sunshine and the roses. And that was a freedom to her. And so the book is built around the concept of the rose being kind of a symbol of freedom to the Hera.
So is there a plot, is there a storyline about the lives of these women and how they journey out of there?
Yes. The Hera is a very shy, submissive girl. Her father is a very government sympathizer. He is a business administration man at Tehran University. And she spends her life with her best friends watching them being eaten away by stress and hurt by the oppression of the government, specifically about the makeup, what you have to wear, what you can see, what you can't see, what you can read, what you can't read. So this book is about a play. It's about an anti-government play in Iran where all of these women get together with some men, and they put on a play. Now, they can't explicitly say to the audience, this is anti-government, but they're filled with symbols, and they're planting seeds of hope. And one of the seeds they plant is the Rose of Nauruz, that's the name of the play. So slowly but surely, the Hera begins to say, I can't be quiet and submissive anymore. And she begins to speak up. And she becomes that woman activist that are the lives of many in Iran. They become activists and stand up. They're not afraid.
So this sounds like a very good historical, although fiction, telling of the life of a Sharia life of a woman in that part of the country and what they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis and the generational oppression that these women have suffered.
Right, and I want to just mention in passing, there are three specific women I dedicate this book to. One of them is a human rights attorney, and this is a real-life story. She is presently in Evin prison. She defended some of the protesters in the 2009 election. She also spoke out against juvenile hangings and juvenile executions in Iran, which is against their own covenant of laws. And because of her outspokenness in defense of protesters, she's in Evin prison. And she recently went through a hunger strike. Her hunger strike was about the restrictions put on her family visits and her daughter. And after 49 days, this lady won the ear of the government, and they gave in to her demands and took the restrictions off her family visits. And her name is Nazrin Satuta, and she's well-known all over the world and on Twitter. I dedicate my book to her because of her courage. And the amazing thing about this, Lisa, her husband has a Facebook page, and he's going to read the book we're talking about today. And it's a witness of Jesus to this family of courage that is going through so much there in Iran.
My gosh, it sounds amazing. Yeah, I mean, Americans really do need to play a quick catch-up on what the culture is like in Iran, in the Muslim and Islamic culture, how different it is and how oppressive it is, not only to women, but to everyone. You know, I mean, it's just there's not a lot of freedom over there, and we, you know, are very complacent because we're very comfortable in what we've had, the freedom that we've had all these years, and we really are very... not very educated in what the realities are of the Islamic culture.
Well, just the other day, my friend Mehdi, who's a student at the university, wanted to read The Rose of Nauruz, and then he asked me, can you send me some literature and information on the American Revolution and on your government? Well, I was pleased to send him some links. They're studying us. And in my book, I talk about in a scene where one of the characters... his name is Hadi, is talking to the Hera, how much he wants to come here because he's read, for instance, the Gettysburg Address by President Lincoln, of course, of the people, by the people, for the people. He says, well, I want a government like that. So I wrote that in the book because they're looking at us. They're scrutinizing us. They want what we have so desperately.
How serious do you think this underground movement is? How big do you think it might be?
Millions. Because, and I'll tell you why, especially on Christmas Day, Iran makes their offer good about arresting Christians. And just recently, they rearrested Pastor Yusuf, who had been set free from prison. They put him back in, and then they let him go again. They do this to intimidate Christians. They've made hundreds of arrests every year simply because the underground church movement is growing so strong, and these Muslims who become Christians are not afraid to publicly talk about it to their friends. They're just not afraid because they have found the truth and they have found the peace they didn't have before, so it's very strong there.
Well, that's amazing because you do not hear about that in the mainstream media at all. No one is talking about that at all.
Well, you hear more about the nuclear situation, and this is one of the reasons I wrote this book, to bring awareness to my dear friends in Iran. My friend Atefi says, please be my voice. And that's what I'm doing today.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. Okay, Randy, how do we get your book?
Amazon.com. It's also in Kindle bookstores, so it's on both of those. But more importantly than anything, you can also purchase it at Family Christian Store. I'm having a book signing coming up February 9th. It's on a Saturday. I'm going to show the documentary about Netta Sultan. She's become like the martyred idol of Iran, if you will, kind of a person that they look up to. So you can come there on February 9th. But more than anything, I'm having the book signing to make people aware. And this is not about making money for me. I don't look at it that way at all. I want to bring awareness to other Christians, to other human rights groups.
And also visit Randy at thecrossinthedesert.blogspot.com. And every week he also has a video web chat that you can watch about various informational issues on his books and on the issues in the Islamic culture. Thank you very much for being with us tonight, Randy. I really appreciate it.
And thank you, Lisa. God bless you.
Keep us posted on your new developments.
I sure will.
Okay. That's just going to about wrap it up here this Wednesday evening for the Culture Vigilante Hour. It's been the Culture Vigilante 2 hours. We're here every Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock. We're happy to be with you on Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. Join Kevin Harnett tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. He'll be with you with a lineup of fine guests. And we're pleased to announce that on Tuesday nights we have Cynthia Davis with us. She's here at 8 o'clock on Tuesday nights for an hour. And I'll be back again here, like I said, every Wednesday night. Want to make sure that I see you next Wednesday at the Rotunda in Jefferson City at 10:30 for the Consent of the Governed rally. Come on up and say hello. We're glad to meet everybody out there who listens to our show and who's a dedicated and engaged patriot who wants to make a difference in shaping their government. And until then, we will see you next week right here at 7 o'clock.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.